Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. This is the audio diary of my life, behind the scenes of a YouTube creator, naked and stripped down. Not me, the podcast. Bare essentials, just a recorder in my hand, and an account of what's going on, all my thoughts, and philosophy of life, those sort of things. If you've not listened to this before, never mind, there's always a first time. And you may find it a bit different. If you've listened to this regularly, you'll think, why don't you just get on with it? And I don't blame you. I'm running around. It's 10 to 8 on the 18th, I think I said that, can't remember, of October 2024. And Kat is snoozing on a chair in the kitchen. Julia is snoozing in a bed in the bedroom. And I am rushing around downstairs, trying to get a few bits and pieces sorted out for the day ahead. So, first of all, I need to turn on my little light. Bing. And I'll just plonk myself in the chair for a moment and tell you what our diarists have been up to this day in history. The English year compiled by Geoffrey Grigson on the 18th. And this is just one entry by Francis Kilvert. In 1878, in Gower Peninsula in Glamorgan. Before that, however, I just need to blow the hooter. There we go. Nice little hooter blowing technology. So, he says, St. Luke's Day. Is it St. Luke's Day always on the 18th? Maybe it is. So there we go. This week has indeed been the summer of St. Luke. Five of us drove to the wagonette, in the wagonette, to Oxwich Bay. We had a merry, windy luncheon on the bank near the church gate, and great fun and famous laughing. An east wind was blowing fresh and strong. The sea was rolling in grey and yeasty, and in a splendid sunburst, the white seagulls were running and feeding on the yellow sands. A wild, merry, happy day. Oh, that's nice to think about that. And it's a yeasty wind. That's an unusual one, isn't it? Yes, going off in the wagonette. It's been a long time since people used to do that, which is a shame. The good old wagonette, eh? I remember reading the Wheelwright book, which talks about the different approaches to wagons, and it's here somewhere, but I'm not going to hoik it out at this very moment. Yesterday we did The Lawful Remedy in the evening, which is a live show which you can pick up on YouTube, on the live show section. There is somebody, I don't know who it is, but somebody downloads those live shows to our show and puts it on their YouTube channel. They don't get that many views, and it is a bit cheeky, I suppose, but it is what they do. And I don't overly mind. It'd be nice to have been asked if it was all right to do that, but they just put it up, I suppose, as their video. Clearly it isn't their video, because it's hosted by Karen Dodd and myself, but there you are. People are a bit weird like that. So sometimes people have asked me if they can take bits of videos, which is fine, but nobody's actually said, can I steal your video and put it up on my channel? However, the information is, of course, useful for people. Yesterday I had three books delivered, all in one go. Three gifts, in fact. And I will get them now, and I will tell you what they are, which they're very lovely and very kind. People are very kind. So the first one is a small book. A very lovely letter came with it by a chap called Adrian Shaw. And he's written a book, a little book of poems and thoughts, called this one. I don't think he does this each year, but this one is called Fragility of the Fern, a reflective poetic companion for the spiritual seeker. And that's very, very kind, with a little card that can be used as a bookmark. And so I'm going to open this up at random. So there's pictures in here of ferns, because it's about the fern, not the mobile fern, the fern that grows. And then there's various bits of prose and poems. Now, as you know, I'm not particularly good at reading poems. I'm not particularly good at reading prose, but I'm opening one at random to see what it says. And this is called Veil is Not Solid. So let's see this. In that place, that illusionary place, that place that lends no trace, gathering pace, but is that the case? Nowhere but here, that place. Hurry, post haste, obtain that space, but no lid topping the base. No longer the face, for you're in that place. Embrace no trace as grace. Have you ever let a thought, it says here afterwards, toward the very act of purpose? Have you ever lent a thought toward the very act of purpose? I'm not sure what he means by that. For the physical to project its image upon the veil of delusion, only to continually thought the essence of the knowing. Sorry, ruined by a sneeze. Another one. Need to blow the hooter again. And as I look out the window, actually, I can see the stark reality, massive, great big streaks, chemtrails in the skies, the swines. We have to laugh at them and say, this will not work. You can spend your millions, but we will not die. We will change the molecules in our body so that, because everything's energy, so that everything that they try will not affect us. They want us to see them, I think, now, and to be worried and to be fearful, but we will not be fearful. Let me try that again on this book. Have you ever lent a thought toward the very act of purpose? For the physical to project its image upon the veil of delusion, only to continually thought the essence of the knowing what one is not. Extracting this image from the reel of celluloid being projected on the veiled and very believable screen being observed by the eye is a task of great demand. Break for a moment from the determination to see this imagery and allow moments between each singular frame to offer up their totality. As the pace momentarily abates, focus one's light of attention upon the ultra-thin and flimsy reel of celluloid. I'm not quite sure where he's getting at, but I think he's saying that, you know, the two realms of the physical and the spiritual are somewhat intertwined and flimsy and not a solid wall. With one's attention upon this projected image, one comes to the realization that the veil is not solid, as has been perceived, but completely transparent. What purpose now lends to thought? The space proposed and believed denies the mind the very place of the projected face. The act of purpose held firm within the image is no longer traced. This is going to take a bit of time to sort of work out what he's talking about, really. One more paragraph here. Nothing barters more for its own understanding and freedom than the mind closeted within its own projection. Yet the transparency fully apparent, this clear space offers a return to pure essence. Perhaps realization is nothing more than the accepting of one's own transparency within the projection of a closeted mind. We are halfway through the book at this point, so anyway, that's Fragility of the Fern, and a reflective poetic companion for the spiritual reader, so one can take that aside, and when you're puffing your pipe and you want to be reflective, you can go and do that. The second book that came, in fact there's two copies of this, one for Julia and one for myself, is from one of the guests I've been on the show, has been on the show. Sorry about me hootering. Gary of the House of Fraun. Gary Fraun, in other words. But Gary of the House of Fraun. And it is The New World Order, it's called. And he writes in a bit of code here. I'm not quite sure what he's actually saying here. Oh, past and present. Just come to mind. Past and present and the adepts. So the New World Order of past and present and the adepts. And it says on the back, let me just read a little bit on the back. Now, I've had him on before. He's the stopper of, I can't remember what the other ones were called. They were great little books. Your reality of history is an illusion. This work explores the history of the New World Order, which has arrived on a seat of contaminated blood. False history gatekeepers have lost control of the narrative. If the, what does that say? Oh, if the media brings tears to your eyes and you are on your way to realization of what is real and what is deceit, the power elite used to control a false history through compartmentalization of truths, which has come to an end. This manual of how humanity has sleepwalked into dangerous times is what it's about. So this one, I won't read bits of this one, but this is kind of a history book. It's a thin history book, telling us at different times what the New World Order had done, when, and how it connects to the deceit. I haven't had a chance to properly look at it, really, to be honest with you. But anyway, that's a fascinating. He writes very well, and it's a fascinating book. So there's two of those to have a look at. The other one that was arrived today is a big tome of a book. It's 600 pages, and it's everything you need to know about history. The Story So Far, by Hugh Williams. A veritable treasure trove of useful information. It's a paperback. This is not readily available, and one of the unusual things about this is there is the index is at the front rather than at the back, which is quite interesting. And then it goes through some of the main points of history. Now, it's all in one place, as it were, but I would have thought many history books are all in one place. So I haven't fully explored this, but it gives us a timeline of all the things that we probably would need to know. Things like the lost tribes of Israel, Jerusalem in 1030 BC, Easter Day, the Shroud of Turin taking a big jump forward, Anne Boleyn beheaded, the death of Erasmus, Queen Mary, all the sort of things. Now, I was wondering if this is a bit like John Hamer's book, which is The Falsification of History, but I don't think this is. This seems to sort of go along the lines of conventional history dates, but giving you a potted history so that you can access it pretty quickly. So it's a useful thing. I dare say there are others like it, but I need to find out its unique selling point. Sorry about the that. Oh yes, another stripe parallel to each other up there. I'm not worried about them. We laugh at those bloody chemtrails now. So I just read you a bit from the introduction here. It says, "World History: The Story So Far." Religion is the true key to history, said the Most Reverend Alan Goodyear, SJ. History can only be read in the light of faith, and the present can only be interpreted in the light of revelation, said Cardinal Manning, DD, whoever he is. "The teaching of history has been disgracefully downgraded in schools," says Tom Holland on BBC Radio 4 in 2014. Anyway, that's just some quotes. So, introduction. Where do we start? He says. "I doubt if there are two historians who will agree on which should be the starting date for this kind of work. We have to start somewhere, though I have chosen the most traditional of one, the date for the creation of the world, which can be deduced from the Bible. This choice is not to imply that the reader must accept that this was the date of the creation. Most scientists claim it was many millions, even billions of years earlier, of course, though this is by no means proven, as, for example, reference to the quite extraordinary rock dating errors that followed the eruption of Mount St. Helens, see 1980 AD. And see also Appendix 18, where we reveal other extraordinary discoveries that indicate a much younger Earth than we are being constantly told. That said, the date of creation of the Earth is not presumed in, or in fact relevant to, the writing of this book. Rather, the reason for starting with 4000 BC is that, from about this time, there begin to be written records, and thus it is from this time that we have an indication, not always reliable by any means, of what man has been doing, and upon which the historian may draw. This written record supplements what has been deduced from fossil and other indirect evidence. But before we get to the time of what, as the world now generally regards them, reliable records tell us, namely, in the time of Abraham, that we need to give some background explanation about what happened and what happened before he appeared on the scene. And to do this, we will start with a short preamble. This preamble may raise some eyebrows because it draws from a source of historical record that is scarcely treated seriously today, namely the Bible. However, many people on earth still use the Bible, and particularly the Old Testament, because it contains a great deal of historical information. It seems to me, therefore, that unless biblical information is replaced by something else, it remains an essential record from which to draw important details of the history of mankind, and no serious scholar may dismiss it outright. It is therefore appropriate and important to make use of it, at any rate, to let it provide some background notes. So that's like a little introduction, and it sounds very interesting, doesn't it? And we'll see where he goes with that. And then you've got all the various bits and pieces. There's a picture here of some pyramids in Egypt. I think this is a stock photograph. So I'll just read you a tiny bit of this, just to get you into the sense of it. 4000 BC, the biblical date for the creation of the world, the Stone Age, etc. As already mentioned, this is the approximate date for the creation of the world, which has been calculated by Professor Edward Hull, Archbishop Usher and others, from what is said in the Bible. It also conveniently marks the date from which it is generally agreed that we can begin to rely on the records that we have, or surmises we can make. For example, 4000 BC marks the beginning of what many archaeologists call the Stone Age. From 4000 BC to 2500 BC, the names that are used to describe this are Paleolithic, the earliest, Mesolithic, the mid-Stone Age, and Neolithic, the new Stone Age. Ever, before we start, we need to stress that one encounters significant difficulties when using terms like Stone Age, because these are only general terms. Archaeologists tend to disagree about their relevance and how long they lasted, and the period that they are assumed to have lasted in one geographical area may not be the same length of time that it covered in another. And the use of such terms is highly, and some think mischievously, misleading, because it implies that the people who lived during these ages were backward and uncouth, whereas historians such as Homer, who actually lived during the last such age, make it clear that civilized countries were highly sophisticated in terms of what they could manufacture, both at the time and well before. So does the Bible, for that matter. Nevertheless, the terms are clearly in common usage, and it would be odd if we didn't employ them as a useful means of navigation. Well, there we go. So that's quite interesting, and obviously one can go on and read more about that. But I thought I would just share those books. Not like I need any more books in this house, because I have quite a lot, but I am a huge fan. And I am just getting rid of all the heavy metals, detoxing the crap. Oh, and by the way, the blue sky. So, in the space of this recording, two chemtrails out of my window have razored the sky and have scratched two chemtrails. They're still there, but they have dissipated so much, and a pale white has covered the bright blue that was there in the space of this recording, which is 20 minutes. They've dissipated, although the scars are still plainly observable, and yet in that time, this is quite remarkable to have been sitting here and watching it, in that time, these two streaks across the sky, the blue sky, it was very blue looking up there, is now white, and it is gathering that thickness rapidly at a huge pace. And whatever it is that they've shoved in there to do that is falling down on you and I. And as I look, there is another aeroplane up there scouring the sky with yet another streak. The fact that people cannot see this is absolutely mind-blowing. That people, I understand people don't look up, but they do look up occasionally, and that they do not see a correlation between the weird sight of aeroplanes pouring out smoke and nasty toxins from their rear, and thinking, why are those streaks remaining for 20, 30 minutes in the sky? Instead of where it is genuine contrails, they disappear within a minute. And yet people cannot see that, and they'll still clasp on to what they understand as a reality and not be able to interpret anything new and not be able to sort of conceive that there is another way of looking at the world, and that they'll stick to what they think they have been told, or what they have been told, what they've been trained to think, and that they are stuck in this prison of thought and unable to be open to new ideas and unable to take the observations that they notice and think, my God, how is it possible that two streaks across the sky initially can turn the whole sky white, and then say, oh, but that's just condensation. Right, really. And then, you know, you're sneezing, you're coughing out stuff, the sun is blocked out, vitamin D is missing from your life, and you're getting ill. And the various other poisons are going to cross the blood-brain barrier and cause all sorts of mental illnesses, dementia and autism and various other things. And people cannot see it. I'm shocked. Shocked by the stubbornness that people will. Now, I wish I was wrong. I wish I was absolutely wrong, but one cannot help observe what is going on. One cannot help the denial of the government, in which they say, no, it's just contrails. And then on their website, you'll see them talking about the screening of the sun and geoengineering. And then you'll look, and as people have sent me, patents for hurricane-making devices. Patents, hundreds of them throughout history, for weather-changing devices. That people will stick to, no, everything's fine, nothing to see here, perfectly fine, as they get turbo cancer, take the vaccines and drop dead. I mean, obviously, it's down to them if that's the life they want to lead. But if, like me, you want to push back and say, hold on a minute, this is not happening. We will not have this, thank you very much. We're going to alert people to it and prevent this awful atrocity where a few people I mean, a few thousand of them, but a few people are trying to depopulate, damage the world, and pretend that nothing is going on. It is quite ludicrous to think that people are not going to notice, but it does seem that people don't notice, and it is very disappointing, really, very disappointing. Anyway, there we are. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed some of it, if not the final rant, then other bits. Until the next one, thank you. Take care. There won't be one tomorrow and over the weekend because I'm going to be away again on an event. So I'll catch you on the other side of that. Till then, ta-ta.